Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Sheila Cast, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Today, doing right by the environment has become a new corporate creed, essential to a company's public image. But get inside a company trying to go green, and the story gets more complicated. That's what Auden Schendler, a sustainability guru at a top Colorado ski company, found out. We speak with Schendler and with Adam Werbach, his counterpart at Walmart, about the challenges they face. This hour, On Point, two environmentalists on the front lines of business and the struggle for sustainability. Later this hour, we'll be joined by Adam Werbach, former president of the Sierra Club and now green business consulting expert. Joining me now from Aspen, Colorado, is Auden Schendler. He's the executive director for community and environmental responsibility at the Aspen Ski Company, a large ski resort in Colorado. Auden was profiled in a recent Business Week article called Little Green Lies, in which he expressed some doubts about his company's ability to go green. He has won an EPA Climate Protection Award for his efforts in 2007 and was named a Climate Crusader by Time Magazine in 2006. Welcome, Auden.
Thanks for having me, Sheila.
Sure. Now, you went to work at Aspen Skiing when you were 29 years old, 8 years ago, after working at Amory Loving's Rocky Mountain Institute. You were full of hope about what you could do as director of environmental responsibility. How has it worked out?
Well, the challenge I ran into was the difference between theory and practice, and that's in some ways not surprising and shouldn't be surprising, but I think in the green business world, you have the impression, or the impression is given out by a lot of entities, whether it's government or corporations themselves or consultants, that green is profitable, relatively straightforward, makes friends. It's all positive, and actually, the reality of business is that almost anything is challenging to do in business. And so environmentalism is no different. And a lot of the real world implementation is enormously challenging.
Yeah, take us inside some of the particular proposals you made that made sense to you. You thought not just environmentally, but from a business standpoint, and they didn't happen. Give us some examples.
Yeah, well, let me give you, first off, a little background. Our company is privately owned, and we're owned by a family that is very, very supportive of our environmental work.
And what does your company do?
We run 4 ski mountains, a 5-star hotel in Aspen, a golf course, and about 15 restaurants. So we're a resort.
Okay.
Our management, from the CEO to the CFO, all the senior people, of which I am one, get it on environment and climate. That's really what we're talking about when we talk about environment these days. And so they're very supportive. And then the staff is supportive. I get calls every day with good suggestions, crazy suggestions. People want to do this. So even my point in the Business Week article was that even at a company with this enormous understanding, this incredible buy-in, these challenges are difficult. And a very easy way to understand that is we just had a capital meeting where we allocate money for expenditures like building repairs over the next year. And we had $40 million in asks, and we had $9 million budgeted. So what's being asked for? Well, you have a leaky roof. You have to replace furniture in a hotel room that's wearing out. You have all these things that are crucial. You have to, obviously, if your swimming pool is leaking, as another example, we have to fix that. Now, those projects are competing with environmental projects that may have no return on investment or very limited one. Not that fixing a roof has a good ROI, but but you're competing for capital. And the fact that a solar electric system might not get funded in that competitive environment is a business reality. It doesn't suggest that we don't care or that people are stupid or ignorant or don't understand the climate crisis. It's We're a business. This is a reality.
But, well, for example, one of the examples I think I remember from the Business Week article was that renovating the oldest lodge that's part of Aspen Skiing's resort would, making it more energy efficient, would have paid for itself in 7 years in energy savings.
Mm-hmm.
That strikes me as a pretty short payback.
Right.
Apparently not short enough. It didn't happen.
Yeah. Well, one of the big challenges that we can talk about more is return on investment thresholds at corporations. But yeah, we had a proposed retrofit at the Little Nell, a 5-star hotel, actually in the garage, and it had a very rapid payback. It was actually a 2 to 3 year payback, and which is incredible. If you could invest your money at that kind of a 30 to 40% return on investment today, you would in a second. Any business person would. But the reasons that this project didn't get implemented were not stupidity or ignorance. It was that the people that we were working with were good business people. If you're running a 5-star hotel, for example, and you have $20,000 to do a lighting retrofit of your garage that's going to save you $10,000 a year, and you have limited capital, you might say, well, look, we need to spend money where we make money, which is in the rooms. Now, someone might say, well, you should be, if you have an ROI that high.
A return on investment.
Return on investment. You should be able to borrow money to get it. And that's true, but these aren't huge projects. We're not huge corporation. You know, we're not a huge corporation where we have access to money or are going to take a loan. It may be that we put a project off for a year. So the point is that even well-intentioned people may have challenges that put off climate-saving projects. And the upshot of the whole discussion is that it's going to be difficult for corporations alone without government assistance to achieve the kind of carbon dioxide reductions that scientists say we need to achieve, which are 80 to 90% reductions by the end of the century.
What kind of government assistance do you have in mind when you say that?
Well, there's got to be a price signal on energy and on pollution. Right now, if your energy is so cheap, electricity in particular, that it's to cobble together a decent return on investment is challenging.
It doesn't feel cheap to a lot of individual consumers.
Gas
prices way up, electric bills up.
You're talking about gasoline, but electricity is you know, remarkably cheap if you think about what you're getting from it. And also, gasoline, even at $100 a barrel, is incredibly cheap. I mean, a gallon of gasoline can do the work of 10 men. It's an incredible resource. And so, for example, we're paying 8 cents a kilowatt hour for electricity in Colorado. In Minnesota, it's 4 cents. So if you're trying to do a project in Minnesota, you have half the ROI that I have, and my ROIs aren't that great. You know, so we need the price of energy to go up through a carbon tax or a cap and trade program that also puts a price on pollution. Right now, it doesn't cost anything to emit CO2, even though the emissions of that CO2 have big impact on our society.
So in terms of assessing what you were able to do at Aspen Skiing, the company's carbon footprint has continued to grow, correct?
Yeah. And that was part of, you know, how I got to this conversation with the reporter at Business Week was, boy, we are considered one of the more progressive corporations out there. We've done a lot of very, very good efficiency work. We've actually cut millions of pounds of carbon dioxide emissions. But because of the nature of our business, which is very energy intensive, our carbon footprint is still growing. And I got to a point where I said, boy, if we're doing this and struggling, imagine what it's like at a corporation that doesn't have a sort of ethical environmental mandate like we do and all this support. This is going to be to achieve the CO2 reductions that we need to achieve to stabilize climate. Man, that's going to be difficult. And, boy,
and you're saying, you're saying it's because businesses apply the same analysis, they expect the same kind of return on investment for a environmental protective investment as they do for anything else. And the only thing you see that turns that around is government taxes that raise the cost of energy so that return on investment calculation changes.
Yes, the return on investment is one part of it, but you know, my example earlier was competition for available capital. So it's not just an ROI question, but yes, short answer is yes, we need a price signal. We need a carbon regulated planet so that that business gets the signal that they're moving into an era of increasingly high carbon costs.
I'm not in business myself, so I don't know how this sounds to a business person, but to a consumer, somebody who's saying energy prices are too low and actually your taxes ought to be higher also, this is a hard sell.
Yeah, well, that's why in Washington you can't say we need a carbon tax. You have to say we need a cap and trade program, and we don't need to go into the details of that. But it's less offensive than a tax. But I think we have to get away from this fear of taxation. One example that Al Gore has been pushing is, okay, look, when you get paid from your job at the radio station, every time you look at your check, you get this feeling of shock because so much was taken out in taxes. Why don't we let you get what you get paid without any taxes? You get your full paycheck, nothing pulled out. But when you go to the gas to buy gas for your car, it's $10 a gallon. Your electricity bill goes up tenfold.
This is On Point. I'm Sheila Cast, in for Tom Ashbrook. We're checking in with sustainability experts about the greening of big business. Our guest, Auden Schendler, has an insider's perspective. His employer, the Aspen Skiing Company, fully supports his efforts towards sustainability, but still struggles to make green changes. I'd like to bring another voice into the conversation. Adam Werbach joins us from San Francisco. He was the youngest ever president of the Sierra Club at age 23. Currently, he's the founder and CEO of Act Now, a sustainability consulting company that works with companies such as General Mills, Procter & Gamble, Cisco Systems. In 2006, Werbach took Walmart on as a client to aid their sustainability efforts. Welcome, Adam.
Hello, Sheila.
I gather that your critics saw you taking your impressive environmental credentials to Walmart as giving that giant retailer a credibility it didn't deserve. You got a lot of flack for doing that.
Yeah, I'd call that an understatement.
tell us about it.
Well, I think, you know, people in the environmental world were very rightly dubious about whether Walmart was serious about its green commitments, its green language, or whether it was just more talk. And we've seen a lot of that, a lot of what we call greenwashing, when the amount of communication outweighs the amount of actual change that a corporation is doing.
Okay. So what's your answer to your critics who say that you are aiding and abetting greenwashing by Walmart?
Well, from my perspective, Walmart has taken a leadership role in the sustainability movement, not just for corporations, but for the planet. And I was totally dubious about that and, in fact, wrote into a contract that they couldn't publicize in any way that I was working with them. But what I found, I was just convinced that they really went and wanted to get this done. Essentially, what happened is that the CEO, Lee Scott, made a commitment in a speech called 21st Century Leadership, where he said that Walmart was committed to three things. They're committed to getting to producing zero waste, to being powered 100% by renewable energy, and to selling only green products in their stores. And those are kind of jaw-dropping commitments for the world's largest corporation to make.
They're huge. What kind of progress are they making?
They're making progress. They just released a sustainability report this week. Some things are going better than others. Best I can tell, they're doing every earnest effort, every good idea that's out there, they're trying to implement and move. And we're seeing lots of great changes, a drastic reduction in waste, a strong move towards renewable energy, although carbon footprint's still growing. And green products are coming onto the shelves. Although, frankly, that's taking more time because there's not as much consumer demand as you'd expect. You'd expect if you live in Boston or San Francisco or New York or in some places, there's a huge consumer demand for them. But in a lot of parts of the country, people aren't walking in saying, hey, what type of recycled packaging does this product have?
Well, I want to get back. You mentioned the sustainability report card that Walmart issued on itself a few days ago. I mean, the New York Times described it as sort of a catch-all for lots of disparate activities that don't have clear connections to energy use or carbon emissions. A coalition of nonprofit groups said Walmart is doing too little too late. Some people say it's greenwashing.
Well, I'm not sure anyone said it was greenwashing per se. I think some people said that they should be doing more, and I think that's a totally appropriate role for outside organizations to play. And I encourage them to do that because it helps. It helps to have that. You know, I think the more signals that Walmart can get, that large corporations can get from outsiders, but more importantly from their customers, the people who walk into the shops and buy their products, the better, because that is a straight line to the CEO's desk, and they know that that matters.
Well, tell us about what you are doing at Walmart, your consulting company.
Well, one of the big projects we've been involved in is basically trying to engage the 1.4 million people who work for Walmart in and around sustainability. And the truth is they've truly engaged us, that the people who work for Walmart have gathered around this concept of personal sustainability, the idea of a personal sustainability project. And in every Walmart store, there's about 10 sustainability captains, people who talk to their fellow associates on paid time and get them involved in sustainability, whether that's educating folks around climate change or on recycling, or whether it's figuring out how sustainability can have a more personal impact to them. And for some people, that means, you know, walking to work one day a week or parking in the farthest spot away from the store and taking getting a little more exercise, or figuring out a way to manage their medication. Because if you're not taking care of yourself, you can't really have these sort of higher order thoughts of saving the earth.
You know, I get the walking to work instead of using a gas powered vehicle. It's a little harder for me to say how the personal health habits relate to environmental sustainability.
Well, and that's actually something I was convinced of. When people started bringing that up, I started trying to convince them not to do it. No. Why don't you pick something that's like recycling? That's something I understand. And they came back and said, no, this is how I understand it. This is what it means to me. When you say sustainability, what I worry about is how do I spend more quality time with my kids? How do I find a way to learn and constantly grow? How do I find a way to manage my disease that I have? And, you know, the average American over 60 has more than two chronic diseases. These are the real things happening in people's lives. And for too long, environmentalists have tried to say, it's not about the things that you care about, it's the things that I care about. I care about global warming, so let's talk about global warming. But if for that person, what global warming is an opportunity for them to help manage the problems that they're facing in their personal life, more power to them. And we have research that we've done since that time that's really proven that out, that as people basically make commitments on their health, basically for sustainability, they begin to change the way they look at global warming. They begin to see themselves as being more efficacious, not just in taking care of their health, but they believe they can take care of the planet. And just like it seems like it's hard to lose 50 pounds all at once and you need to lose 1 pound at a time, it's hard to think about one person combating global warming. And those two thoughts actually work together.
Interesting theory. Do you have any evidence you can point to that those personal changes of habit do connect in some way to global warming, to climate change, et cetera?
Fortunately, I have thousands and thousands and thousands of examples and data. With over 1 million employees, you know, virtually one out of every 100 or people or so who work in America work for Walmart or connected to it. So it's a huge population of people. And we're seeing profound changes in the way people are reducing their energy bills, people are increasing the amount of recycling they're doing in there. The people are looking at and are much more interested in buying green products. Again, there's a challenge there because a lot of these folks, when they started out, were really interested in green products. So those are three examples of ways that's happening, and we're seeing that in frankly ways that we never ever expected. Wetlands cleanups in neighborhoods, school education, people out in their schools doing education. So there's lots of things, more than you can even imagine.
Yeah, Auden Schindler is still with us, and I want to ask you, Adam. You know his story. You know that how his thinking has changed to a real skepticism about how much business can or will be willing to do to curb carbon emissions, which I gather is different from your opinion. I wanted you to comment on what your take is on that.
Well, I know Auden personally, and I have a great respect for his work. So, I don't think it'd be fair to call Auden skeptical. I think what Auden is, and sorry to speak for you, Auden, is demanding, and like myself, is impatient and wants to find a way to solve the climate change problem, which is serious. We need to get to an 80% reduction in our use of carbon by the year 2050. We're just about to have the next phase of the Kyoto Protocol negotiations in Bali, and that's a large commitment that we need to get made. And I agree absolutely. That's not going to actually happen without government and, frankly, cross-governmental commitments to actually do that. And partly that's pricing pollution, saying how are we going to sell, how are we going to portion out the sky so it's not just free to use. The place where I actually disagree with Auden is that I don't actually think that means that we need to charge more for energy, that energy is going to, we're going to tell consumers that energy has to cost more, it's going to cost them a lot more money. I think we can find ways through basically redistributing how people use energy so that people who use a ton of it actually pay a lot more and people who don't pay a lot more and actually pay less. And at the same time is really radically bringing down the cost of producing energy through renewables so that in the end, 10 years from now, we see the net cost of energy actually going down while people have energy. You know, billions of people on the planet do not have enough energy to get their basic needs met. And we can't go about talking about raising the cost before they actually even get to a place where they have enough food to put on their table.
Auden Schindler, first of all, let me ask what your take is on what we heard from Adam about what Walmart's doing. It seems like a very different picture than you painted of what Aspen Skiing has been able to do.
First, hi, Adam. How are you doing?
Good talking to you.
You know, there.
You two are allowed to talk to each other. We encourage that among our guests. So.
No. There's this historical sense that environmentalists have to be poor, they can't make a lot of money, they can't work with powerful entities, they only have to work with weak nonprofits. And that's, to me, hugely annoying. And I think what Adam is doing is saying, why wouldn't the environmental community work with one of the single most powerful entities in the world? In fact, let's work with a lot of them, corporations. My sense is what Adam was thinking there. And the other, I think, interesting thing that's coming out of Adam's work and my work is we've said, what do people expect of us in business? And what they expect is that you put solar panels on the roof and that you have education inside the stores. But what Adam's doing and what I hope I'm doing is saying, what is our corporation's biggest lever? If you look at Aspen Skiing Company, our biggest lever isn't eliminating our emissions. We could eliminate the whole ski industry's emissions and we'd still be out of business in 50 years. What we can do is use the name Aspen to drive legislative and policy change, and we're doing that, and I can talk about that later. What Adam's doing and what Walmart's doing is, one, recognizing that their biggest influence is, one, in what they sell, and two, they can create a grassroots revolution using the people who work at Walmart. I think it's visionary, it's thoughtful, and the whole idea of greenwashing there, to me, is silly. It's as silly as anyone calling me a skeptic on green business. I'm as optimistic on the ability of business to drive change as anyone.
Let me step back and ask you both to tell us what you mean, how you define sustainability.
Well, the classic definition is that it comes from Gro Brundtland, and it basically says meeting the needs of the present without compromising the needs of the future. You know, we tend to try to take that into a very personal context and asking people about, you know, how do you want to get what you want right now without sacrificing what you want for the future? And that works pretty well.
Okay. Auden, how would you define it?
We define it as staying in business forever, whatever your business is.
There's a debate around, and I will say there is a debate because sustainable growth is kind of a catchphrase that Wall Street and analysts like to use a lot. And I think one of the challenges that people use that, I actually agree with what with excuse me, with Auden's definition, but the challenge sometimes is to say it's not sustainable growth as you've seen it before. It's sustainable growth thinking about actually some of the constraints and business challenges that you may not be thinking about and may not have been thinking about. And likewise, some of the opportunities that you'll need to take advantage of if you want to be a business into the future.
Well, one of the things I'm trying to understand because is whether there is a difference in the challenge that a smaller company like Aspen Skiing faces in trying to control its emissions and be responsible environmentally, and a very large corporation. In addition to Walmart, Adam, you consult for some other big corporations like General Mills, Procter & Gamble. Is there a difference in what we can expect in terms of a contribution to the environment from those kinds of businesses? Auden?
I don't think it's that different. I think it scales. You know, it's, yeah, I don't think there's a difference.
I think we should have high expectations of everyone. I mean, I think that, you know, it's funny when I work with smaller businesses, they go, well, we're not Walmart and we can't just tell our suppliers what to do. You know, if you think about, you know, a small business who has to worry about, you know, ordering office supplies, well, they can't tell their office, you know, Office Depot to go change all the materials in their office supplies. And Walmart can tell the people or ask the, their suppliers to do that. And then you talk to big businesses, they go, we can't be as nimble and small as a small business because, you know, they can just change on a dime and we make plans much further out. And, you know, Wall Street has different expectations of us. And the truth is that everyone's got their own, you know, and if you spend a lot of time worrying about that, you don't really focus on what you can get done.
Well, also, let's
You take a small business like, okay, like Aspen. Well, we can't influence a major manufacturer because we just, you know, for example, Kimberly-Clark, we were buying $30,000 worth of paper products from them. Well, recently we joined a boycott of Kimberly-Clark because of their practices with around sustainable or lack of sustainable forestry and lack of post-consumer content in their paper products. We're a rinky-dink purchaser. They're a multi-billion dollar corporation, but we engaged them at a CEO level conversation on these issues and got them into the room with Natural Resources Defense Council and Greenpeace. So, you know, we, because of our name, we have big influence, and Walmart has big influence because of its purchasing power.
Let's involve some of our listeners in this conversation. Laura is calling us from Lakeville, Massachusetts. Hello, Laura.
Hi, Sheila. How's it going?
Fine.
I have a question for Adam. Regarding Walmart's sustainability practices. What's important to me is, one of the things that's important to me is organic food and sustainability as far as growing practices. And I do know that Walmart is trying to incorporate more organic produce and food products in their stores. But my concern is that they are sourcing their products from China, and which is kind of a twofold or a multi-layered issue for me, because first of all, there's the carbon footprint of shipping all of your organic food from China over to the United States, and then there's the, of course, a very current hot issue right now of, is China a place that could be organic? Is it? It's polluted, it's unregulated, and I was hoping that he could speak about that.
Thanks, Laura.
Okay, thanks.
Adam?
Laura, that's a very thoughtful question, and it's complex, so I don't want to try to reduce it to something so simple. Walmart, since it owns its own logistics systems and owns a whole fleet of trucks, for example, is very aware of how much it takes to ship a thing from one place to another because they pay the cost of it. So as such, they've been trying to reduce what we might call food miles and trying to find more locally sourced food for their stores in the United States, for example. The question around China is, again, another complex one. You know, to my mind, we need to go to invest a lot of time and a lot of money in helping China to produce its wares in a more organic fashion for food and in a safer and healthier fashion for its manufactured goods. And we want to encourage that to happen. So we got to make sure we don't say, well, we don't want organic from China. No, we do want things that come from China to be that. We are in a globalized world. And, you know, like it or not, you know, what the wealth that has come to China has brought a billion people out of poverty. And people can eat and can enjoy a lifestyle that's much higher because of the fact that we buy their products in the United States. So there are good things that have come out of that as well. I think this complex challenge about where is more carbon efficient to get a product is something that we're just trying to untangle now. In a simple case, it's much better to be closer. But in other cases, for manufactured good, for example, it makes more sense to manufacture them in regional hubs and then ship them out by container ship at times. So it's complex, and we're trying to untangle it piece by piece.
This is On Point. I'm Sheila Cast, in for Tom Ashbrook. This hour, we're talking about environmental efforts in the business world. Joining me from Aspen, Colorado, is Auden Schendler, Executive Director of Community and Environmental Responsibility at the Aspen Skiing Company. And with us from San Francisco is Adam Werbach, founder and CEO of Act Now, a green consulting firm. Auden, let me ask you, what successes have you? We really kind of focused when we were talking earlier about ways in which things haven't been successful environmentally at Aspen Skiing. I imagine there are ways that they have been. What success would you point to?
Oh, yeah. I mean, one of the problems with the Business Week article is it didn't point to a lot of the exciting successes we've had. One Maybe the most important thing we've ever done as a business, including opening in the late 1940s, was filing an amicus brief to the Supreme Court on a lawsuit called Massachusetts versus EPA. And that lawsuit asked the EPA to regulate CO2 as a pollutant. It won. And 3 weeks ago, a Kansas review board denied a coal plant. And the only legal basis for this unprecedented denial was Mass v. EPA. And for a small ski resort to have any part in that kind of a large policy effort was very exciting. So that's one policy example, and I'm happy to give you on-the-ground emissions reduction examples as well.
Give me one of those two.
Well, quickly, we installed a small hydroelectric plant at Snowmass Mountain. Aspen, until 1957, was entirely powered by these kind of small hydro systems. And this system cost us $150,000. It makes $10,000 a year in clean power. And it's a model for other communities that in the mountain regions that can create renewable energy themselves at a reasonable return.
Let's talk to another caller, Dave, in Stowe, Massachusetts. Dave, welcome to the show.
Hi, Sheila. Thanks so much for doing this program. It's badly needed. I wanted to ask a question, kind of looking at the real big picture. My background, just quickly, is I work in energy conservation, renewable energy, have my entire life, and I was actually working with the company that installed PV panels on one of the Walmart stores in Colorado. I was not actually part of that project, And it actually presented a quandary for me, because I don't shop Walmart because of a lot of the other issues, and I certainly am I'm really glad they're doing all this renewable stuff, but and focused on sustainability. But my question is this: the word sustainable growth was brought up previously, and I would love to hear what your guest thoughts are. Ultimately, you know, the world is a finite place. We cannot continue to grow constantly. That's obvious if you think about it. There's a finite number of grains of sand on the beach, but it is, you know, it's a huge number, but it's finite. And exponential growth means we strip out resources much faster than we are aware. You know, we suddenly realize that we've really decimated resources, and it happens so quickly. It's incredible. I don't think your guests obviously cannot be expected to change our economic system, but I want to say, it's the economic system stupid. You know how people say, you know,
right,
it's the government stupid. Can we have some thoughts on that? I'm really curious what.
Okay,
let's
ask Adam first. Adam, what about this? Is it an inherent impossibility to have sustainable growth?
The truth is that we still have a great unfulfilled promise of the 20th century, which is bringing millions and billions of people out of poverty and living a quality of life that befits the dignity of humanity. And to do that, we're going to need to grow our energy supplies, to grow our housing stock, to grow our food supplies. So there is going to be growth to do that. I mean, if you look at demographics, there will be 10 billion people on the planet. That's not really questioned. There will be 10 billion people. After 10 billion, it's going to start going down slowly. Okay, so let's plan for that. Let's talk about how do we bring the cost of energy radically down so we can afford to do it. Now, the question about should we consume to all end, I mean, it's, you know, Thanksgiving's coming up, and I heard the average Thanksgiving meal is 3,000 calories. So, you know, that type of growth of the waistline isn't necessarily sustainable, you might imagine. So there's all sorts of growth that we don't want to be doing, and the key in that word is sustainable. It's the type of growth that you can do year over year in a way that won't harm your ability in the future to live, both for your natural resources and for yourself or your corporation.
Auden, what are your thoughts about whether there is a point at which we should just stop talking about growth, that we just can't do it?
Yeah, I mean, I think that is obviously on the table. But right now we live in a society where when you spend a dollar, 80 or 90% of that money goes to creating carbon emissions. We need to evolve ourselves, evolve our economy such that when you spend that dollar, there's only a teeny portion of it that goes to creating carbon emissions. And in that, you can then see some level of growth. Obviously, you can't grow exponentially forever.
You corrected me earlier when I said you were a skeptic about how much business can do or would be willing to do to curb carbon. Do you believe that business is ahead of government when it comes to policy on these questions? Is business leading the way?
Business is ahead of federal government, but not state government. There's some very, very progressive state government initiatives, in particular in California, but now also in Colorado. You know, there's certain businesses that are way ahead, but we're seeing regional, even local governments take the lead on this, I think.
And Adam, what are your thoughts on that point? Who's leading the charge for sustainability?
I have to say it would be corporations in the United States, and that's just because of the utter failure of the federal government to do anything in the last 8 years. But I'd also say that globally, the European Union has been enormously influential, and you know, people attack China a lot as being an environmental laggard. But frankly, their car fleet is, I think, their average mile per gallon or CAFE standards are roughly around 35%. So 35 miles per gallon. So in some ways, they're leading us in efficiency in ways that we don't really give them credit for.
While we're on the question of the role of government, I'd like to go to Dave, who's in Somerville, Massachusetts. Another Dave. Dave, welcome.
Hey, Sheila, how are you doing?
Fine. How are you?
I would just say that I think the people are way ahead of the government and business in this regard. I would love to pay $10 a gallon for gas if I didn't have to do a tax return in April. And I think that you can see a possible consensus building here. I mean, Mike Huckabee, for example, on the Republican side, is pushing this fair tax thing, which people don't give much of a chance. But if you think about it, you know, if you got rid of the income tax and instituted a sales tax, you could weight that towards the carbon producing end of the economy. And I think you could really put a political consensus behind this, especially if the Democrats came back and said, well, okay, we'll get rid of the income tax for people who make under $200,000 a year, still tax the high income, bring in a sales tax, and then weight that sales tax to a carbon tax. I think it's ready to happen. And once we get rid of Bush and whoever comes in, I'm very optimistic that this could really happen in the next couple of years. And I don't think business is going to act in opposition to it, because what they really want is predictability. And they don't want to, they'd rather guarantee their businesses long range with a predictable tax structure. And as for Adam's point that you have to bring the cost of energy down.
Well, look, why don't we let Adam pick that up? I have a sense, and Auden will correct me if I'm wrong. I have a sense that Auden agrees with you, but I'm not sure about Adam. Adam, what's your response to Dave's support of $10 gasoline and higher taxes on energy?
Well, obviously he's trying to redistribute, and I know that's his desire. I just think that my sense of the American public is that they would revolt at $10 a gallon gas, particularly put on by the government and blamed on global warming. If you want to find a way to turn people away from global warming as cockamamie scheme, raise their gas to $10 a gallon. So I don't actually think that's the way to do it. And if you look at Americans today, people are struggling. People are really struggling. When you walk into certain stores on the 1st of the month, the 3rd of the month, the 15th, the 31st, you see when people get their government assistance check, that's when they're shopping. Month to month, people are just trying to make it by. So any topic of raising their energy bills is going to really hit them in the bottom line. It's going to make them have to pay for less childcare or to not take a full course of medication. So there's real implications to that. The thing I also want to challenge, I'm sorry to get on this, is that there isn't the type of demand that I think the caller is saying right now. I
mean, demand for
green products, for spending more money for green, I do not see that. I see that among luxury goods and people who can afford it, but really among the average American, there's no desire to pay more money for a green product.
Let's hear from Lisa, who's in Burlington, Vermont. Hello, Lisa.
Hi, Sheila.
Hi.
I just wanted to make a point on one of your guests earlier commented on the sort of comparing weak nonprofits to the corporate world. And my point, I guess, is that nonprofits have and continue to do much of the work of environmental sustainability and the green movement has started at a grassroots level, and I just wanted to get a comment from the guests.
Auden, I believe that was your comment about the frustration of...
Yeah, and my point was simply that we shouldn't just work in the NGO community. We should work with everyone, and corporations are enormously powerful. Let's work with them. Paul Hawken just wrote a great book on this called Blessed Unrest, which is about how there is this stealth movement that no one's really been tracking that involves hundreds of millions of people that is totally outside government and corporate world.
Steve is calling us from Shrewsbury, Massachusetts. Steve, what's on your mind?
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it turns out I flipped on the program just having finished jury duty, and I was thinking about individuals being motivated to be green and relating that back to just having signed out and done my duty. But there's a $2,000 fine if you don't show up to do your duty, and everybody knows that it's a fundamental part of our government. So I wonder what the motivating factor would be for an individual to be green.
For the motivating factor for an individual to be green.
Would you apply the same thing
to business? Do you think that there's also a missing motivation for businesses to go there?
Well, I don't know. Maybe I'm a bit too cynical for my age, but you know, the bottom line is the pocketbook or the wallet, and people tend to be motivated more by that, usually in the short term, and you know, if you're going to go out and buy 20 compact fluorescent lights versus just burning the ones that you have, most people I know will just burn what they have.
What about that, Adam?
Well, I think it's a great question, and I think it's probably similar for both businesses and individuals. To my mind, the philanthropic or social desire to do the right thing is important, but shouldn't be the core reason for doing it. You should look at, for a business, looks at top line and bottom line. How can this increase my sales? Like literally, is there an emerging green market, and how do I touch into it and connect my product to that? And bottom line is, how does it save me money? How does it actually lower my operating costs by taking energy out of the system is probably the easiest way, or reducing my waste in order to make my processes more efficient? And then how can I use this concept of sustainability to help motivate my workforce, to get the people who work in my company to get more engaged and more productive in what they do because they believe in what we're trying to do as a social mission as opposed to just selling another widget? That's some of the ways that corporations who are successful are looking at this. The ones who are not successful go, I need a green program because everyone else has a green program. I want it in my annual report. Make me a green program. That type of thing. If someone approaches us with that, we go, you know, thank you very much. You can go call an advertising agency.
But back on the individual side, I mean, if individuals don't feel a big compulsion to go in this direction, or if they're sort of interested as long as it's only costs them a few extra cents but not 20 extra dollars, where does that put business in terms of moving toward green products?
Well, similarly for an individual, you know, you sort of say, how does this solve the problems that you have in your life? You know, how can green be a way for you to continue your level of learning? How can green be a way for you to manage your personal issues that you have in terms of your weight or your exercise program or spending time with your family? How can green be a way for you to be able to do the things that matter most in your life? And that's where we find the real resonance. When the question is, how do you do green because it'll help save the planet out there? That's where it's sort of more tenuous, particularly if you're living paycheck to paycheck and you don't really have a lot of time to worry about other things. You're worried about the things that are on your plate already.
A few days ago, the UN's Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change issued its final report, and I was struck about the sense of urgency that the scientists sort of outside the report spoke about. The head of the panel said, if there's no action by 2012, then it's too late. What we do in the next 2 or 3 years will determine our future. This is the defining moment. We're down to about 2 minutes so or less. So let me ask both of you, if we have that sense of urgency, what are the first things that need to be done? Auden?
I think you have to look at this challenge as something vastly greater than the civil rights movement in terms of order of magnitude. This has to be a revolution, and that takes people, getting people out in the streets and government involvement and that level of commitment. This is a revolution unlike any we've seen in the history of the world. So that's the kind of attitude we have to take into this.
And pick one thing, then, that you would make your very highest priority.
Getting out in the streets, lobbying Congress, making this a political issue more than, a personal emissions reduction, even a corporate emissions reduction issue.
And it would be lobbying Congress for a carbon tax?
for some level of regulation on carbon.
Some kind of tax on energy. Adam, what would be your priority to be done if it's this urgent?
Well, the first that we need is a carbon framework, whether it's cap and trade or a taxing system, but some framework that actually prices the cost of using the sky and limits it. That is critical. Along with it, I think is really taking this opportunity for a change. You know, we all need that opportunity, and this is that moment to reflect and to think about the future and to look in your own life in the organizations, institutions, and corporations you're involved with, and saying, are you taking advantage of this? And how does this solve our core problems as well as this giant crisis that we share together?
I want to thank you both. Adam Werbach, founder and CEO of Act Now and author of Act Now, Apologize Later. It was a pleasure to have you on the show.
Oh, thank you, Sheila.
And Auden Schendler, Executive Director of Community and Environmental Responsibility at the Aspen Skiing Company. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks. Good to talk to both of you.
On Point is produced by Julie Jopp, Eileen Imada, Stefano Katsonis, Hillary McQuilkin, Tanya Rowley, James Ross, Karen Schiffman, and John Wibby, with help from Allison Bagg, Noah Hertzbundzel, and Ping Huang. Our senior producer is Wen Stevenson. I'm Sheila Cast, in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point.